the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site that covers the Arizona Cardinals, and recording on a Tuesday night, a week into free agency, is Seth Cox, my co-host from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. If you recall, just a couple weeks ago, we had his co-host on with us, Justin Higdon, for two episodes talking about the Combine. And Seth and Justin are busy with their pre-draft content these days, so it's a good time to get on. Seth, we're a week in, and some things feel good, and some things feel very uncertain with the Cardinals, don't they?
Yeah, and that's typically how this time of year goes, right? I mean, I think the biggest thing is, and we'll get into it later today, is they've really, really done a nice job of just setting themselves up to truly kind of just do whatever they feel like in the draft. There's no crazy need heading into it outside of one position that we'll discuss.
One, maybe two.
Yeah. And then there's the obvious ones. It's like, oh, you can always take, you know, you can never have enough corners. You can never have enough, you know, quality offensive linemen. You can never have enough edge rushers. Like, all of that is true of any. But like, when you look at the roster, you're like, there's probably two spots that you look at and you go, hey, this needs to be upgraded, or like they need an alpha in the room. And that's nice because, you know, one of the nice things about this draft as we, you know, get through wave two of free agency is that there are elite players. And that's something we'll get into in the next couple of weeks, but there are elite players at a couple of positions, but there are guys, lots and lots of guys that project and look like they are going to be long-term high-end NFL starters. And that is something that, you know, if you go through the end times of the Steve Keim era, that's really where the bugaboo started. And it really kind of started in 2016, right? Like, you've got draft picks that aren't even staying in the NFL for long. And then you're having to throw your free agency money at those same positions. And something you and I have talked about ad nauseum, right? But when you have to continually double up, right? Like when you have to take a defensive tackle and then go sign two defensive tackles, and then you take an inside linebacker, then have to sign three inside linebackers, like, that just stunts your growth. And, you know, we'll see what Monty Austin Ford does. We can't say with any certainty yet, but it definitely feels like he understands that it's year two of this rebuild, as we discussed last week, and that he's bringing in guys that are clear upgrades over what they had last year, but that can be upgraded with superior talent that you hope comes from development within the organization.
And in this edition of the show, episode 525, we're going to talk about the moves, because when we last talked, we didn't have all the information. But there've been a few moves since our last show last week, both re-signing newcomers and players leaving. We'll delve into two positions that feel like what's going on. And we'll talk about some mock drafts, some trading possibilities, as now we'll start shifting a little more towards draft content as we're about 5 weeks away. Since we last recorded, the Cardinals lost a pair of players. Hollywood Brown heading to the Kansas City Chiefs on a one-year deal that's worth up to $11 million. Zeke Turner, special team stud for the Cardinals since 2018 when he entered the league as an undrafted rookie, He's headed to the 49ers. They officially re-signed a few players, guys that we figured would happen. Elijah Wilkinson, or Aaron Brewer, and Bobby Price. Or did we talk about them? Or I don't remember if we talked about them last time. But
we did talk about Price on Thursday, yeah.
Yeah, so Elijah Wilkinson is official. He is back. And there have been some minor deals that they've done since their first signings. They added a receiver in Chris Moore. Probably don't know him. They added another defensive lineman in Kyrus Tonga. And on Tuesday, they added center guard Evan Brown. Where would you like to start with? Let's hammer out just the guys that are back. So with the return of Elijah Wilkinson, Aaron Brewer, and Bobby Price, we're talking about, but with Wilkinson, I think we can firmly say the Cardinals and they're not making any, there's no splash coming for left guard, right? We can say that confidently.
Yeah, I mean, unless somebody gets cut and of that nature, no. It feels like this is kind of the end, and I don't mind how they finished it off either. Like, you get a guy in Evan Brown that, has extensive work done at center and right guard, and so you bring him in and he gets to fight a lot of people for that left guard position. And if he can make that move, I think I read that he's played 17 snaps in his career at left guard.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So again, it's not like, but if you can, if he can come in and play and do that, if not, $2.25 million for a veteran interior, and I think it's up to 2.25 based on incentives.
I think it's 2.35 up to 2.9, but okay. Even still, it's not crazy. So we'll have to find out what the guarantees are. But this is kind of interesting, because Elijah Wilkinson's is not a big contract, but it's 100% guaranteed. Tristan Colon comes back, it's about half guaranteed. I think it's 450,000 he gets 450,000 guaranteed. They got Yelda Froholt still. I kind of like the mix, because now we're looking at a scenario where we're not quite sure what the rotation's going to be. But for me, I felt like, oh, they really are going to roll with Yelda Froholt again, but now they signed Evan Brown. I'm like, but are they? And it allows, I wonder if the plan, because you could go either, Froholt's definitely your starter at center, and then you've got a whole bunch of guys you're throwing at left guard. Evan Brown, Tristan Colon, Elijah Wilkinson, Carter O'Donnell. You've got all those guys. Dennis Daly, who's still in the mix. Or maybe you project Brown as your starting center, because he's started 40 games over the last three seasons between center and right guard, mostly at center. If you plugged in Brown at center, then you could also potentially put Froholt there at left guard and throw him in the mix there. I will say this. The teammates on that offensive line are highly impressed with Yelda. They call him the strongest guy on the team. But do you think that they might give Brown like the lead position at center, or at least the start to try and to win that job?
No, I think they like Froholt. I think that's their plan, and they want to see who can win that left guard position. And Brown's shown throughout his career to be versatile enough and show enough to that he could potentially earn the job. And so, I don't think it's absurd by any means or out of left field. And I think they want to have some continuity on the line at some point. And if it's center and right guard, bringing in a veteran in Jonah Williams and then bringing in a, like, all of that could make sense to me.
And on the defensive line, they add another guy in Kyrus Tonga, which, he's a guy you've never really heard of. Most people haven't heard of. Big guy out of BYU. Essentially, a solid nose tackle, right, and probably going to be a backup or definitely a rotational guy. But now you're setting yourself in a position like because they added Justin Jones and Bilal Nichols last week and LJ Collier. Now you've got four guys with years of NFL experience. I know Collier has not played a ton of games, but he's been in the league for several years. Kyrus Tong's been in for 3 years. Justin Jones, Bilal Nichols, they've been in for a few years. They came in the league together. And so now you've got four guys that you could consider veterans. They're not young guys, all who have significant playing experience in the NFL, which is, honestly, if we look at how they entered last season, it's definitely in a better place. And now, right now, you're pushing, Dante Stills to have to work harder to get playing time. And then, you feel good about five of the defensive linemen they now have on their team right now, with Collier and Jones and Nichols and Tonga and Stills. Now you got five defensive linemen you feel pretty good about.
Yeah, and that's what, again, we kind of go in there with, and you say, you look at, and obviously, it's tough right now to really, go into depth on anything, but with the Cardinals, as bad as it was last year, you have to be more excited about this year. So, like you said, you have Bilal Nichols, you have Tonga, you have Justin Jones, right? So, all right away, you're comfortable. You even said it, if Roy Lopez is your fifth or sixth guy.
Oh, I completely forgot about Roy Lopez, and yeah, if he's you're comfortable with kind of six guys.
And that was your excellent observation last week of hey, if Roy Lopez is your sixth guy, you're in a good spot. Again, it doesn't mean that it can't upgrade. There's very few positions the Cardinals have right now that they can't upgrade. But, you look at that and you say that's much better. We've tried to project this on here as much as we can, and it doesn't mean we agree with it, or it doesn't mean that it's wrong or right. But everything that we've heard, everybody we've talked to, is that they're very, very happy with the progress that Zaven Collins made last year in his first year as an outside backer. So, you and I stare at that and go, man, that could really be upgraded, right?
and we'll talk about that later in the show, because that's one of the positions that we're going to dive into.
Right, but you look at that and you go, that's probably why, if you saw anything, it was going to be similar to what they just did with Evan Brown, right? They're going to bring in a guy that all of us are going to be like, well, I guess he's, league average, but it's not like they're not overly concerned about it. And so you look at, the offensive line with let's just say from left to right, Paris and Brown and Froholt and Hernandez and Jonah Williams, you're like, oh, okay. Again, you'll probably upgrade at least two, if not four, of those positions fairly comfortably. But you also know that you're not weak anywhere or as weak as you were last year. And so that was what their goal was. That was what they were trying to do more than anything. And I think they did it to a fair extent, at almost every position. And like you said, there are a couple that stand out when you just look at their, quote unquote depth chart at this time that still need to be upgraded.
Yeah. Now the one move that I'm not sure where he fits. It's Chris Moore. Nothing really spectacular about him. He's got some length. He's kicked around the league a little bit. He averaged 19 yards a catch, but he only had 22 catches. He never had more than three catches in any game last season. He didn't score a touchdown. And for his career, he averages 12.4 a catch. His best year was in 2022. With the Texans, when he had 48 catches for 548 yards. To me, that was a weird signing.
Yeah, I'd have to kind of really do a deep dive into him to understand what their what their thought process is or what they're wanting to accomplish there. Because as you said, it's not, it doesn't necessarily jive with a lot of things they've done, unless this is just, you know, one of those situations where you look at it and you go, hey, this is a guy that, you know, excels on special teams, and they just, you just look at his snaps and, you know, and obviously he was around, he was in Tennessee with Monty, right?
He wasn't, because that was just last year. He was in Houston, and I will say this, is that the Nick Caserio connection really, really comes into play. So there's always three guys from three teams, the Texans, the Titans, and the Lions, that I kind of take a look at. I'm like, okay, what do they think? But he was in Houston 2021, 2022, and while Monty wasn't there, Nick Caserio was there, and Nick Caserio and Monty Austin Ford have a great relationship. So who knows if that has anything to do with that at all.
Yeah, and you look at it, you know, so in 21 in Houston, and the other thing is crazy is, you know, he's going to be 31 this year. He's almost 31. And so it's not like he's a spring chicken either. But, you know, in 21, he played, you know, he played about 250-ish snaps, 240 to be exact, at wide receiver. In 22, you know, which is obviously a terrible season for Houston, so it's not, I don't know if it's necessarily a positive thing, but he played nearly 700 snaps at receiver, both slot and wide. And remember, he's 6'1 and 200 pounds, so it's not like he's a small guy. And then last year in Tennessee, again, not a great indication of things. He played about, what is that, about 600 snaps at wide receiver, more of these out wide than inside that he did the previous year. So, you know, it's just one of those situations that you kind of look at and you scratch your head. I mean, he does some kick return works, but, you know, you look at it and he played a lot of snaps for bad teams at wide receiver, right? The 21 Texans, you know, they, I'm double checking. Yeah. 4-13, the 22 Texans, obviously 3-13. And then last year's Titans team getting Mike Vrabel fired. He'll be 31 this entire season. You know, he's 6'1", 200 pounds. He's not a slot guy.
He feels like a potential Zach Pascal replacement, but they still have Zach Pascal on the roster.
Yeah, and I really don't think they can do anything until the draft, right? At this point, like with how their wide receivers look anyways. Like
exactly.
you can't make any moves.
Yeah, and let's move on to that. So coming up next on the Rise Up Series podcast, of our Cardinals talk on the web, let's look at two positions where we're like, they've done a lot, but not of these two positions. That's coming next in Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. Two positions in the offseason that the Cardinals have a glaring need. And one, number one is receiver, and then we also look at the outside linebacker position. In free agency, they've done a really good job of solidifying. You know, they have a new backup quarterback, so now they have solid backup. They added depth at running back. They've brought back and added bodies on the offensive line. They definitely upgrade on the defensive line. They added a linebacker and brought back a linebacker. They added a cornerback. They haven't done anything in safety, but they really didn't need to do it. They brought back their punter. They added, you know, another guy who can return kicks in DJ Dallas with Greg Dortch. But now you've got the receiver position, which looks like that can't be the plan. Yeah, same as everyone's saying, Greg Dortch, come on down. Let's be honest here. You know, and I wrote an article about this and I put it on Twitter. If you haven't heard it yet or haven't read it yet, understand this. The way the wide receiver room is set up right now on the roster, the most accomplished receiver on the roster is Zach Pascal, who has two seasons where he had over 600 receiving yards. And let's not forget that he had four receptions last year. The top three, the three guys that we project as being the starting three as of today, right now, Michael Wilson, Greg Dortch, and Chris Moore, none has had a 600 yard season yet in the NFL. And yeah, I'll be honest. I expected Hollywood to come back. I am not surprised that he's in Kansas City. That feels like a perfect fit for him and for the team, for the money that he's getting. The contract looks really good. And I'm left to wonder, and Mike Jarecki put it out there on Twitter, X, today, Tuesday, that Hollywood was hoping that the Cardinals would come back with a counteroffer, and they never did. We haven't won. Maybe someone will ask. Like, I'm sure he won't answer it directly, but I've heard from a couple places that they never actually. I heard one that they had an offer on the table for Hollywood, and another one that they never offered him a contract, which is just weird. But they never tried real hard to get Hollywood back, and then to lose Hollywood, and then they bring Chris Moore in. Doesn't it feel like, even though this is a tailor-made now pick for Marvin Harrison or Malik Nabers, they're at the fourth pick, doesn't it feel like there's still something that's got to happen? That they're real, the way they put the rest of the roster together so far, doesn't it feel like there's something coming? And there are a handful of receivers that you could say, okay, you know, T. Higgins, you could make a deal for T. Higgins. I'm not sure if that's what you want to do, but you could. You could go get a DJ Chark. Mike Williams just signed, so that's not going to happen. But doesn't it feel like there's still something coming at receiver? Because you're going into the draft, like, you're being forced. Like, we know they're going to take one, but even adding Harrison is like, you might have to draft two to make this receiver room feel good.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe that's their thought process, that they've got they have that ability still. You know, you look at it, it's tough at all to see exactly where things remain, because, you know, we've talked about this, like, when you're in a rebuild, you don't want basically, you don't want to oversell yourself, right? So, like, they were never in, or probably weren't in on, you know, like a guy, and obviously they didn't, but like a Calvin Ridley, right? That ended up getting what, $55.5 million or something crazy.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Oh no, he got $92 million. That's
yeah,
right.
It was something absurd.
Yeah, and you know, and so with guys like Gabe Davis and Darnell Mooney, and, you know, you mentioned Marquise Brown, obviously, and then gone. Then you turn your attention and you go, okay, so, like, who's next? And you know, the obvious one that's been connected with Cardinals is T. Higgins. And it's like, okay, would you give up, in that case, you know, that's a trade, sign, you know, trade and then sign. So would you give up 35 for Higgins? Maybe that's part of this whole, like, they're going to trade down thing that we'll get to eventually. But, you know, that just seems, I don't know. You just look at the room, and like you said, it. I mean, we can say it. It's bad. It is.
Right now, no, it's like, it's worse off. It's worse off than it was last year. Like, maybe not at the end of last year, because it was basically Greg Dortch, Michael Wilson and Trey McBride anyway. But, like, you want the receiver room to be good. And, like, even adding Harrison, you don't want to put all of that on Harrison. And I know they believe in Michael Wilson, but we don't want to put that on a guy who's dealt with injuries, right?
Yeah, correct. And so, like, you know, I'm trying to.
What about, like, a Marquez Valdez? I think he Marquez Valdez Scantling is available. Russell Gage is available. None of those guys are super special. DJ Chark, he's got, you know, Donovan Peoples-Jones, Josh Reynolds. Any of those guys move the needle? Like, would you like to see them add one of those type of players before the draft?
Like, what would you feel about, like, a Michael Thomas?
He feels washed, but.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, but that's kind of where you're at, right? Like you said, Valdez Scantling, Tyler Boyd's out there, but he's, yeah, yeah, you know, kind of a big slot guy.
At the same time, though, like, I try to get some of the younger guys because they really don't like they're not signing age 30 guys. They're not signing age 30, 31. I think Chris Moore is the only the age 30 plus guy other than like Aaron Brewer that they are bringing back.
What about like a DJ Chark?
Chark is a guy I wouldn't mind. He's a guy that we've taught. What is it, like 3 years in a row?
Has he re-signed yet? I feel like sometimes he's things.
I double checked. He hasn't signed with anyone yet, but you know, he's got in talking about would DJ Chark, like, would he be, because we're going to talk about guys like Brian Thomas. Is he a guy like what you would see Brian Thomas becoming, like a guy who you've got, he's got the speed, he's got the measurables. You should be good. And you're like, but maybe he's not good.
Yeah, and that's always the worry about these guys, especially coming out, you know, like, and so with a Chark, he's been fine, you know, throughout his career. It's not like he's been good by any means, and he hasn't necessarily been, like you said, he hasn't lived up to the athleticism and obviously the draft pick.
I mean, he had the 1,000-yard season, but since then it's been 706, 154, 502, 525. So he's just been he's kind of been like all the guys that the Cardinals already have, only a slightly more proven.
Yeah, and I think he would fit. I mean, the main guys you want to kind of stay away from are obviously like the Chase Claypool, right? The LaVisca Chenaults.
Yeah, well, yeah, because those guys haven't been productive in the least in like the last couple of years.
How would you feel? I mean, and he's kind of in the same vein, but like an Isaiah Hodgins.
You know, I mean, I'd feel better than Chris Moore, right?
Right, yeah. So it's just interesting because you're in the... I don't think we saw it getting to this point, but then also the fact that it's at this point now, you're just kind of like, well, you know, let's see where they go from here.
Yeah, and then that leads us to the other position at outside linebacker. They've done absolutely nothing. I know, and you mentioned this before, and we've talked about on the show, is that they like Zaven Collins. I don't think they like Zaven Collins enough to exercise his fifth-year option.
But no,
they feel comfortable right. with him at outside backer, and I think there is a belief that B.J. Ojulari is going to be good. I do find it curious that they've done nothing. I will say this, though. The edge market, old for the most part. It's not great. Yeah, and so that's the one area where you're like, I kind of get it. Unless you're going to go trade for a guy, it's going to be hard to find. And let me show some of the names out there that might make sense. So, and guys you probably aren't, that many fans aren't super familiar with, former Washington guy, James Smith-Williams. He had 3 sacks, but he's young. Another Commanders guy, Casey Tuhill. You've got Mike Dana from the, we talked about him.
Yeah. I wonder why he hasn't been signed yet. You think nobody just wants to meet his demand?
I'm sure what it is he wants more than they're willing to get. I had Romeo Okwara, but he just announced he's stepping away from football. Yannick Ngakoue is still available. But like, if you look at the list and there's a bunch of age 30 plus guys, like there's some really old guys that are available. And I know that's not the route the Cardinals want to go.
No, and, you know, like I said before, I think Dana is the one that fits best for what they need and what. And I think with, goodness, Chase Young, I literally just looked at his name, too. That's crazy.
He got way more money than we thought he was going to. 1 year, $13 million. Oof.
Yeah, I think with him ending up there, like, it puts Dana, because now Dana's in a weird position where he's going to have to take less. Right. Like he's not going to get more than $13 million. And so, you know, Adana makes sense. I like the one you mentioned in James Smith-Williams, you know, he wasn't bad there. You know, it's just, it's interesting. There's just not, I mean, these guys don't get to free agency. We know that more than anything. The one guy I wanted to bring up, I mean, and again, he would be kind of a guy that just kind of shows up. I don't know if he would even have anything. Oh, yeah, I got to spell the name right. Because he hasn't really done anything in the NFL, and that's Bradley and Nye. He was a fifth-round pick out of
Utah. I really liked him coming out of Utah, but the Jets, they didn't like him well enough to even bring him back.
Right, and that's always when it's a guy like Robert Saleh who tends to do a good job. I mean, you look at what he did with Bryce Huff. You know, it makes it difficult. So I just think that, again, they weren't going to splurge, right? And right, wrong, or in, you know, other, like, they, that was never their plan. And so now they've backed themselves into a corner where, you know, I think they're willing to wait and see who wants to play ball and then kind of go from there. Another name that's at the back end of that, like, age that we've discussed would be Tyus Bowser, and he missed all last year. Was he hurt last year?
Yeah,
I think he was. And so, because he didn't play at all last year. Yep, Achilles tear. So, I mean, you have to look at him as a guy that, you know, might come in on a 1-year flyer type of situation. So there are some guys, right? Like, there are some options, but there's not. It's always tough. And I think for them, they really do want to, like, give Zaven and BJ the chance to show off and prove that they can do it and before they kind of move on. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because it's two of the most important positions in the league, and they're really, you know, they're basically either, well, we can't say, you know, banking on, because we don't even know if they're going to draft like a Marvin Harrison Jr., but like, they're basically banking on a draft pick and then guys that haven't proven anything to kind of step up and do it if they don't make a move now. And that's, so that'll be what's interesting here. You know, but outside of that, we'll see how, they've got money still to play with, which is,
they do, one they thing. Do.
And the other thing is, and the thing that I would look at is, and he, you know, you've got guys like Derek Barnett still available. He wasn't great last year. He's never, you know, lived up to the hype in his career of being the 14th overall pick in the draft. But he is a veteran that's done it, right? He was in, unless Gannon's like, no, I don't want him.
Right? Like, that could be like the thing. He was there in Philly with Gannon, but then you're like, but they haven't signed him, so what does that mean?
Right. So it's just, you know, there's a lot of interesting aspects to the whole thing on how they're going to address these things, because it's never easy. And you know, you've got guys that have disappointed too, like Marcus Davenport, who are still available. Like, it's just, there's a lot, and they've got these needs still. And they just, it just, from everything we've heard, obviously, you know, we don't have all the details, but it just seems like there's no hurry to it, which makes me think that they've got a plan. And like I said, sometimes we don't always agree with that plan, but at least they have a plan. I, you know, sometimes it doesn't work, but at least they have a plan, I guess, right?
Let's hope. Coming up next on the Rise Up here at Podcast, the best our Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on and talk a little bit about some mock drafts, which has proposed some interesting scenarios. That's coming up next on Rise Up Red. We're back on the Rise Up here at Podcast, the best our Cardinals talk on the web. Getting into the part where we're going to discuss some mock drafts, and there's some interesting scenarios, because I think Cardinals fans are especially talking about right now, especially with Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft proposing chaos. The Minnesota Vikings traded into the first round again, getting the Texans pick that they got from the Browns in the Deshaun Watson trade.
And so the Vikings now have number 11 and number 23. They just lost Kirk Cousins. They signed Sam Darnold. And so we're all sitting here. Oh, yeah. I don't know if that is made it any more clear that they're going to try and trade up for a quarterback. And number the kind of the buzz has been the Pats and the Cardinals. And Daniel Jeremiah had, and I've seen this in two or three mock drafts, which is a good scenario to play out. The Cardinals end up trading back from number 4 to number 11 pick, and they end up with 3 first-round picks, number 11, number 23, and number 27. Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft works out pretty well because they end up getting at number 11, they get Jared Verse. Seth's not a big fan, but if you're talking about pass rush, he's one of the more talented pass rushers in the draft in terms of prospects. And so you fill that immediate need that they have there and pair him with Dennis Gardeck. I'm sorry, with Zaven Collins and B.J. Ojulari. Then with the 23rd pick, they get a long, fast, athletic receiver, Brian Thomas. So you pick up the receiver. And then they add another defensive lineman in Byron Murphy out of Texas. Now, if you trade back that and you get those three players, maybe you feel pretty good. The question is this. Is getting number 11 and number 23 going to be enough to back off of number 4, especially when if we're talking those top three receivers that everyone considers, these guys are great. You've got Harrison, you've got Neighbors, and you've got Roma Dunze. Probably all three are off the board by number 11, and so you miss out on all of them. Do you think the Cardinals would or should move off of number 4 for those two picks?
No, and that's just me. You know, I liked the move last year, and like I said, there's plenty of room to upgrade, but I feel like with the need at wide receiver, they have to get an alpha, and you know, everybody knows my take. It's Marvin Harrison Jr., but even if it's not, like, you can't miss the three top guys and then expect to hit a home run, and so for that, I would stay and then, you know, look to move at another spot if needed. So
what would it be if instead it's just 11 and 23, what if they threw in next year's first as well? That would be really hard to turn down, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and that's what makes it difficult and why you'd have to be, you know, very confident in your process, because for like a Jared Verse, we just talked about it, like Marcus Davenport, Derek Barnett, those are some of the, you know, comps that you see with him from a physical standpoint. So are you confident that that's his floor and that you'll get, you know, a higher ceiling? You know, in Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft, they end up with Verse, and then they grab Brian Thomas, who, you know, is a very intriguing prospect, but you kind of mentioned it earlier, you know, some similarities like a DJ Chark, who, you know, he's got 1 year of high level production. He's a workout warrior. Is he going to be more than that? You know, is he Kevin White, right? Is he the guy from Georgia Tech? Oh goodness, was it Stephen Thomas? I don't remember off the top of my head, but the guy that the Darius Hayward Bay, like you see these guys all the time that end up getting taken early that are super freaks. I mean, there's nothing, there's no doubt that he is a Brian Thomas of freak in nature, but you know, you look at his production and you're like, okay, where was this production for a guy that was supposed to be, you know, that type of freaking nature? So it's just little things like that you have to be careful with. And, you know, I like Byron Murphy at that last pick. You know, if it ended up being Marvin Harrison and Byron Murphy, then, you know, that's, I think I'd be fine with that too. So, you know, it's just one of those things. But then you look at it and you look at, you know, getting next year's one as well. It makes sense that they would be intrigued with it because it is a haul and it is above like whatever the draft charts would show you, but it also factors in the quarterback tax that you and I have talked about for about a decade now that right. You have to pay it. So
how about this? There was another mock draft, and it's not about trading back from the number four pick, but Kyle Odegaard, guy that we know from his time over at azcardinals.com, now runs bettingodds.com, where he writes a lot of Cardinals and NFL content still. But he did a mock draft, and he has them taking Harrison number four, and then he has them targeting a pass rusher, UCLA's Laiatu Latu, and they trade up five spots. They take their number 27 pick and their third-round pick, number 90, to move up to number 22 to get Latu. That is a move I wouldn't mind at all. And, of course, you have to have the questions answered about Latu's neck injury. But by all accounts, at the combine, he was medically cleared by NFL doctors. And while he did medically retire, he did go in on and play 2 years without any injury issues there at UCLA. And he is he not kind of the best right now pass rusher of that class?
Yeah, he probably is. And the biggest thing with him is, you know, kind of like Jalen Phillips a couple years ago. And it's just that this guy was he had to medically retire from football. And so that's the question you have, because from a just a overall standpoint, you're talking about a guy that's a high level producer that has, you know, excellent measurables. And looks like a guy that could come in and play at a high level with high level production as well. His, and I never mean this in a negative way, so I want people to understand that, but his alleged, you know, agility testing he did as pro day was like super, super elite. And so we're talking about a guy that can play on the edge, that can rush the passer, that gives you, you know, those things that you're lacking right now. And if he ends up, you know, I talked to Justin about this the other day. I think his floor is like an Anthony Spencer type. And Spencer was a guy that had a really nice career coming out of Purdue, was drafted right around the same area that they have Latu going. He went 26th overall, had a bunch of seasons with 6+ sacks, made a Pro Bowl. So if that's your floor with him, that's a really nice, you know, pick. And then obviously you just hope he's a little bit better than that. But I mean, you always are worried about a guy that had to medically retire because of neck issues, right? Like that's just, you have to be very incredibly confident in what your medical staff is telling you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the one thing you worry about with a guy like Latu. I do have another proposal, and this is one that hasn't come up yet, but it will on Cards Wire because it's a network mock draft that we did. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Luke Easterling, a guy we know, we both know from Seth's time working with him with draft stuff. And he's been over here on the NFL Wire on and off for a number of years. But he wanted to wheel and deal. And he wanted to move up from number 57. And he didn't want to give up next year's stuff. So this is the deal we came up with. And it kind of solves two things. Now, granted, the Cardinals end up moving back 30 spots. They take the number 27 pick and they moved out to number 57. They get number 57. And Tampa Bay's outside linebacker, Joe Tryon-Soyinka, who is entering his final year of his contract, former first round pick, and plays a position of need. He's never been a big, big producer thus far. He's got 13 sacks in 3 years, but could do a little bit. What would you feel about that? dropping 30 picks, dropping out of the first round. If you don't love the ACs, they still end up with 35. They got 57. And then they add a starting caliber edge guy in Trajan Soyinka.
Yeah, and, you know, you look at it, you need to find, obviously, guys like that, like you said, that can be guys that are impact players. And so, like, with Trajan Soyinka, you've got a guy who, you know, this is always the hard part about those guys, right? Is that when they go to good established defenses, there's not a whole lot of expectation on them immediately. And so then, like, if you replace them from, or you take them out of that defense, what do they look like? And, you know, for Trajan Soyinka, you know, his career high in sacks is 5. So it's not like he's had his breakout season yet anyways. 13 sacks in his career. He's battled some injury issues in year 1 and in year 3. And so, but again, if that's your floor, if that's the type of guy you're getting, I think you're comfortable with the pick. You know, the biggest thing I have a question about is how, when people, especially like with the trade down scenarios or trade, you know, more than the trade up, obviously, but trade down scenarios, they have 11 draft picks at this point, right? Obviously, those end of the draft picks that you and I would love if they package, you know, 226, 186, and 162 and just go from like 104 to 97, right? Like just move up a little bit. But when you have 11 draft picks, yes, you get more bites of the apple, but at the same time, the apple does get smaller as you bite it, right? And so the chances of hitting on something at 138 and then 162 and then of course 186 and 226 are infinitely lower. But if you take something to like what Kyle is saying and you take 27 and say 90 and you go from 27 to 21 or 23, I don't
remember. 22 is 22.
Yeah. So in that range, that early 20s range. And you instead,
and you get a guy that you love.
Right. And you end up with and not just that, but like a guy that impacts what you need as well. You know, we've lauded, and we do mean it, you know, very much so, that we've lauded what Monty's done, where you don't really need anything. But if, let's just say, and I'm just going to throw a name out there, it doesn't mean anything, I haven't heard anything, just throwing a name out there, but let's just say that they love Jackson Powers Johnson, the interior offensive lineman from Oregon, right? And they go, we got to get him. We can't let him get to Miami. We got to go up to 20 with Pittsburgh and go get him. And they make that move and they make that trade and they make, you know, even though they've signed Evan Brown and re-signed Elijah Wilkinson and they have Yeldon for a hold, like, you look at that and you say that's what you do, you know. So if they end up taking Marvin at 4 and then take JPG or JPJ at 20, again, like, you and I would be like, why didn't you take, you know, Byron Murphy, or why didn't you take an edge, you know, something that's a little more of a need. But like you said, if it's the guy that you're like, no, this is who we need, this is who we want, then that's what you do, is as opposed to staying back at 27 and going, man, we'd really like to get Jackson Power Johnson. And then you're like, you know what? But we really like Graham Barton too. And then both of them are gone. Then you're like, well, do we?
That's like, hey, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun. Nope, we got Hassan Reddick.
Right. And then you're like, do we like Zach Frazier at 35 or do we just go somewhere else? Right. And yeah. So those are the discussions. And here's what I've said. If they move back to 11, so if they move back, they, you know, obviously they're going to add 2 first round picks. So you're going to end up with 3 first round picks. By the way, that doesn't work out very often. Let's just be honest, right?
Like, well, and to be honest as well, that's a lot of money you're committing as well.
Right. And that's something people don't think about. They're like, oh, you know, you get three starters. And then it's like, hey, if this is great and there are three starters, you have to pay all three at the same time too.
Yes. Like,
or franchise, and then you start pissing people off anyways. But like, but if they were to do that, my number one target with a bullet without question would be either Quinyon Mitchell, the corner from Toledo, or Dallas Turner, the edge from Alabama.
Yeah.
I think those guys both fit exactly what they need profile wise. Need wise, you know, we haven't even talked about corner. Like, we love the Sean Murphy Bunting signing. We think Garrett Williams is really good, but realistically, they still kind of need one more, right?
Yep.
Especially what they call a boundary or an outside corner. And so if you're able to get like a Quinyon Mitchell at 11, and then at 23, you look at it and you go, and a guy that I've been, obviously I've watched him and I think highly of him, but people I really trust are telling me is basically they think he might be the best guy after Marvin Harrison is A.D. Mitchell out of Texas. So he was at Georgia, obviously, and then moved to Texas this year. He had another phenomenal workout. I have the same concerns with him that I brought up with Brian Thomas. People I trust told me not to worry about him. I don't have him as highly ranked as the people I talk to do. Let's just put it that way. Because of everything we mentioned about Brian Thomas, like it's just always a concern to me when a guy is that physically dominant from a physical measurable standpoint and then doesn't put it on the field. Those are the things that concern me. But like, if you end up with, you know, Mitchell and then you at 27, you're able to sit back and you go, hey, we're going to take the best player at these three positions. And you end up with maybe taking a flyer on a Chop Robinson, who's never really been productive in college, right? But is a freak of nature. And something Justin and I have really talked about quite a bit, actually, is that there is the reality with these Penn State guys that they've never actually turned out in the pros, right? Like,
aside from Micah Parsons, who, and it pointed out, right, he wasn't an edge player.
Right, exactly. And you saw, and you mentioned, you know, Mel Kiper's mock draft today, and he doesn't do trades at this time. And that's what he had Marvin Harrison and Chop Robinson. And you're like, I like the idea of Chop Robinson a lot more than I've liked.
Actually like Chop Robinson. Yeah. Like on paper, it's a good pick because he's super athletic. The Cardinals need pass rushing, but then you're looking at, because Samson Ebiketie was equally freaky as a pass rusher. And did anyone know what Ebiketie did last year?
Yeah, exactly. And then, I mean, even like a Odafe Owe.
Oh, that's another one. Yeah.
Yeah. Who's been fine, but it's not like he's been, you know, again, 13 career sacks. Kind of give him a pass on year one, obviously coming off the Achilles thing. But like you said, Ebiketie, a guy that you and I both liked. And sometimes there are teams and players that are just kind of fool's gold, right? You used to have the USC quarterback thing, right? Like, and Ebiketie, to be fair, did have six sacks this year. He kind of went up a little bit. That Falcons defense wasn't bad. But again, like, you just look at it, you sometimes, and this is the debate, right? This is always the debate. And you hope that getting more bites of the apple or more swings or whatever, you know, you're going to hit a home run, whatever analogy you want to use. But the reality is that the draft is really hard. it's incredibly hard. And the fact that you look at a, you know, like the 2022 NFL draft and you look at it and there were some what you and I would call slam dunks, right? I mean, Aiden Hutchinson was a slam dunk, and they took Trayvon Walker, who had a nice season this year, but it wasn't like, I mean, I think you and I would have both agreed that they should have taken.
I mean, obviously, like, I don't like Hutchinson. That was easy. It was easy.
And then you look at it, and a guy that you and I loved and has, you know, well, he's been one of the best pass rushers on a team that's won back-to-back Super Bowls. George Karlaftis, right? He went from 6 sacks as a rookie to 10.5 sacks in his second year. And you're like, how does a team like Kansas City sit at third? Like, they didn't have to move up for him. They just
right. And I remember the debate with Karlaftis. You're like, no, he's not going to be like, what's not to like about him? What's not to like about him?
And so
he also said the same thing about Cameron Thomas. And Cameron Thomas, he didn't do anything. Granted, he was a third round pick. But like, he also had all those traits.
But that's also exactly the point, right? Like, you can love a guy and be like, oh, this is, you know, this is great that you got those 2 second round picks and Cam Thomas and Myjai Sanders, and you get absolutely nothing out of either of them. And then there's also the reality that the NFL is really hard. And so you get a guy like Reek Woolen, or for those that don't know, you know, Tariq Woolen at the time, when he was came out as a 5th round pick out of UTSA, a guy that we loved. We're like, oh man, 5th round, that's, you know, that's a great spot. Why wouldn't the Cardinals be interested in him? And then he comes out, and, you know, he's a all rookie team, 3rd in defensive rookie of the year, makes a Pro Bowl, and then sucks this year. And you're like, wait, this doesn't make any sense. Like, this guy.
It's because he lose the Ta.
Right.
Tariq Woolen was good. Reek Woolen is not.
Right, exactly. And that's literally the only scientific thing we can say about it, because and so, you know, and then you look at the whole conversation about wide receiver, and we talk about, and you brought something up off the air, and I think it's insanely accurate and important. The draft is about, especially early, it's about minimizing the risk and maximizing the outcome, the positive outcome of it, right? And so you look at it and you go, okay, you can draft Jamar Chase or Amon-Ra St. Brown. And there's no question Amon-Ra St. Brown has been phenomenal and potentially just a better pro thus far than Jamar Chase. But there, it's literally 10 times out of 10 you're taking Jamar Chase.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah.
You're not taking the risk of waiting till the 4th round to draft Amon-Ra St. Brown and hoping he turns in to a bona fide, you know, number one alpha receiver. You're just not. And so that's where all of this kind of comes from, because you have to manage that risk versus reward thing. And, you know, if you pass on Marvin Harrison Jr. and you say, we're going to take Brian Thomas, and I'm not trying to pick on Brian Thomas, that's just who DJ mocked. So, and then he becomes, you know, he becomes DJ Chark, where, you know, he has a 1,000 yard season, but it's kind of just up and down in that 400 to 600 range the rest of the time. And then Marvin Harrison, even if he doesn't become, you know, Calvin Johnson,
right, if he's not 1500, like, he's still 1100 a year.
Right. Like, if he's still a similar guy to what you've seen with, like, Jamar Chase, you're like, well, but at least we got a corner, or, you know, or in that draft class, we got an edge rusher and a wide receiver and, you know, defensive tackle. And it's like, sometimes it, just take the best guy.
And as we're probably going to say a lot over the next month, it's like, why would you pick, like, and that's the thing with when he had Trayvon Walker versus Aiden Hutchinson, you're looking, you know, Marvin Harrison, like, what's there is no one that you'd like to make it, that there is no safer bet as a great receiver, as someone who has, okay, one, the bloodlines, okay, two, the production over multiple seasons with different quarterbacks, elite quarterback CJ Stroud, mid quarterback in Chris McCord. You've got length, You've got speed. You've got playmaking. You've got durability. There's literally nothing about his other than, you know, you could question his want to. You could question sometimes his route running, but route running is different. Like, you can teach route running, and you can get better at route running in your career. You're not going to get faster. You're not going to become a better playmaker. You're not likely going to become more of a dog, like that just alpha. I cannot see any reason why anyone would take another receiver over Harrison, but it seems more and more like that could really happen. Now, people like Malik Nabers, and Todd McShay was on some podcast on Tuesday, absolutely gushing about Nabers. Like, he's going to be that guy that is just absolutely electric. He's a defibrillator for an offense. That he's the guy that defenses are terrified of. Like, why would you not be terrified of Marvin Harrison Jr.? But I don't know. Maybe neither pick is the wrong pick, but if you have to choose over one or the other, why wouldn't you go with Harrison? He basically beats Nabers in every measurable, and his dad's a Hall of Fame receiver, and his dad is a guy you don't F around with, which means even if he's not the same mentality, he was raised with a discipline that you know is going to be okay.
Right, exactly. And you know, as long as he doesn't have some off-field just don't...
Yes. Yeah. And hopefully he wasn't in that life, because he didn't have to be. Yeah. And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise of Seared podcast, best of Cardinals Talk and Web. This has been episode 525. I will plan on another show this week. I'm sure there will be more things to talk about. And over the next several weeks, we definitely have free agency. We've got draft stuff, all the stuff to talk about. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. As always, we'll be back again soon.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red. Whoa!